Welcome to Food Safety Talk, the podcast for professionals in the food supply chain.
Hello and welcome. I'm Iris Maas, and today I welcome Elisabeth Andokessen from the Consumer Goods Forum. Hello, Elisabeth.
Hello, Iris. Nice to meet you.
Yeah, nice to meet you too. And Elisabeth is the Interim Director of Global Food Safety Initiative. And before we hear a bit about her and about the GFSI benchmarking and the latest technical advisory note update, let's listen to a small info snippet what that is all about.
How about a little extra? Our food wiki. What is GFSI? GFSI stands for Global Food Safety Initiative. It is a global initiative from the food industry. Its goal is to improve food safety across the entire supply chain. GFSI started in the year 2000. GFSI does not certify companies. It does not issue certificates. Instead, GFSI reviews certification programs. If a program meets the rules, it is recognized by GFSI. The idea behind GFSI is simple. Reduce food safety risks, avoid repeated audits, and build trust between companies. What is GFSI benchmarking? Benchmarking means comparing things. In GFSI, it means comparing certification programs. Each program is checked against global food safety rules. These rules are the same for everyone. GFSI checks food safety content, it checks audit quality, and it checks transparency. If a program meets all requirements, GFSI officially recognizes it. Why is GFSI benchmarking important? Imagine you are a food manufacturer. You sell products in many countries. Each customer may ask for a different audit. One wants IFS, another one wants BRCGS, another one wants SQF or ISO. This creates many audits. It costs time, it costs money, and it creates pressure. This situation is called audit fatigue. GFSI helps reduce this problem. If you are certified to a GFSI recognized scheme and your customers accept GFSI recognition, one audit can be enough. Customers trust the result. They trust the standard. And they trust the auditor. What does a GFSI recognized certificate mean? It shows strong food safety practices. It follows global best practice. It builds confidence. And it reduces the number of audits.
So, we have heard the benchmarking of the GFSI sets one common level for food safety. No matter which country a company is in or which standard it uses, it makes different certification programs easier to compare and ensures that they are equal in quality. And the GFSI recognition, I can say that, is very important for our customers. So, Elisabeth, how come you work for the Global Food Forum?
Thanks for the question, Iris. So I've been at GFSI for just over a year now. I joined in October of 2024. And I come from a background, so I should start with my background. I have a qualification in food science and nutrition and have work experience in food technical and in food policy, so trade associations. Throughout my working career, GFSI has been a subject of interest, either with other stakeholders that I was working with or with the businesses that I worked for. So when I had the opportunity, when I was aware that the job was available at GFSI, I met the previous director and was very signed up to her mission and her vision. I was also very, very supportive and committed to the cause of GFSI and all of the things that they are trying to do with their strategic priorities. So I welcome the opportunity to join. We're also based in Paris. So that was also a great lever for me as well. That helped to influence the decision. But essentially, I think most people in the food safety world and food safety community are very familiar with GFSI and its work and its mission, and are subscribed and supportive of what GFSI is trying to achieve, improving the integrity of food safety audits. As am I. So that's part of the reason, really, is being very much aligned to the and committed to the mission and vision of the organization.
So then last year you joined, and you're now in the center of where it all happens, was the GFSI.
Indeed.
So what were the most important updates last year in the version of the GFSI benchmarking requirements?
Right. Okay. So we published the version 2024 of the benchmarking requirements in December of 2024, and they became active, applications for recognition became active from January of 2025. Mm-hmm. The main updates were, so the main update was alignment with international standards. So we our benchmark requirements are based on Codex, General Principles of Food Hygiene. And there had been some updates between our version 2020, which is the previous version of the benchmarking requirements, and version 2024. So bringing them up to date in line with the changes to the Codex standards. We also made some changes in relation to food safety culture, multi-site certification audits, and then some lesser changes and tweaking in relation to tweaking and improvement of grammar, you know, some administrative changes essentially. Mm-hmm. But the main changes were around the Codex hygiene principles.
What is BMR? BMR means benchmarking requirements. These are GFSI's official rules. They define what a certification program must include. GFSI uses the BMR to decide which programs can be recognized. What is a CPO? CPO stands for Certification Program Owner. A CPO is an organization that creates a certification program. A CPO manages that program. The CPO writes the standard. The CPO defines auditor competence, and the CPO oversees certification activities. The CPO can apply to GFSI. GFSI then reviews the program. If it meets the requirements, the program becomes GFSI recognized.
So just now on November 10th, just fortnight ago, you have, or GFSI has released the new technical advisory notes to clarify and help with the interpretation of the existing benchmarking requirements. So what motivated this specific update and what does it focus on?
So once we publish the new version of the requirements, and I think later on we'll talk about how we create our requirements and how we liaise with our stakeholder base.
Yes.
We became aware post the publication of some challenges for some of our stakeholders in terms of being able to apply for recognition, but also some questions around some of the clarity that we had given in the publication. So one of the things that was new with version 2024 was the publication of an implementation handbook, which was intended to assist with guidance of the requirements. We entered into some conversations with some of our stakeholder base, mainly certificate program owners, but we also took feedback from other parts of the ecosystem, the food safety ecosystem as well. And that's where the technical advisory note has come from. It's the opportunity for us to review and revisit some of the areas around the guidelines itself, but also produce a document that gives some clarity to some of the requirements where it seemed that there was some confusion in the marketplace.
Mm-hmm. So you just mentioned also that food safety culture gets a more important role now in the new benchmark requirements. Why is that, or what is your expectance around the topic of food safety culture?
So in terms of food safety culture was always in the benchmark requirements. So it exists, a requirement for food safety mm-hmm. culture exists in the,
yes,
the version 2020. What we've done in version 2024 is we've put a stronger focus on integrating food safety culture into management systems, and then also highlighted the importance and alignment with the the food safety culture requirements in Codex. So mm-hmm. that's essentially how we've strengthened and enhanced, should I say, the requirement for 2024. So it's not a new requirement. It's just ensuring that we mm-hmm. we appreciate the changes mm-hmm. and acknowledge the changes exactly mm-hmm. that Codex have made. In terms of expectations, and again, we'll probably come to this as we talk more about our role in the ecosystem. We set the requirements for the programs, and then the program owners themselves are the ones who are responsible for putting the detail as to what's expected for the sites themselves. So what that looks like, so what our requirements look like on the ground, GFSI don't go into that level of detail. We set the what, if you like, mm-hmm. of the mm-hmm. of food safety audit programs, mm-hmm. and the program owners themselves are the ones that then set the how.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So perhaps now is the right moment to look a bit behind the scenes and about your benchmarking process. Could you walk us through how the benchmarking process actually works, from developing the requirements to recognizing a scheme?
Yes. Okay. So there are many moving parts. So I'll try and be as concise and stick to a straight line as I can. But sometimes mm-hmm. I might jump around a bit. So
that's
apologies
okay.
for that. So we have so GFSI, as you know, is part of the Consumer Goods Forum.
Yes.
In terms of our governance, we have a steering committee, and that steering committee is composed of the food safety leaders in mm-hmm. some of the GFSI CGF member companies. Steering committee is responsible for setting our strategic direction, and is also responsible and helps us as, because they are the specifiers or some of the specifiers in the food industry. They help us to understand some of the challenges, opportunities they see in terms of the benchmark requirements and the future of food safety audit programs. So Steerco is then subset or split into subcommittees. So we
yes.
have the technical subcommittee, which is
yes.
the subcommittee that's got responsibility and is a custodian, if you like, mm-hmm. of the benchmark requirements themselves. And they are responsible for the operational direction of the benchmark requirements.
Mm-hmm.
So they sign off a mandate. Mm-hmm. This and the mandate can be written and contributed to via various routes, but they set the mandate for another group that I'll mention, which is the Benchmarking Harmonization Working Group. The Benchmarking mm-hmm. Harmonization Working Group is a really important working group within the GFSI world, in as much as this is the group that is responsible for writing, agreeing, and making recommendations on what the next version of the requirement should say. The way we constitute that group is we have an open call. We put out an open call for interested parties, and the makeup of the group, it's a diverse multi-stakeholder group that's made up of food industry, so manufacturers, mm-hmm. retailers, service providers, CPOs, CBEs, suppliers into industry as well. There's opportunity for academia, for academics to mm-hmm. join the group as well. So we try and curate as wide and diverse a group as possible mm-hmm. to bring their knowledge and expertise into the delivery and review and future of the benchmark requirements.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the three of the most important groups. We then, as part of our benchmarking review process, we consult mm-hmm. to the wider world. So we usually will put out an open call to the to the food safety ecosystem to interested parties, mainly via our mail outs. So we have an extensive list of stakeholders that have subscribed to be kept informed of GFSI updates. So they'll be asked, we'll put out a call for consultation on the requirements or on elements of the requirements. And we will then look and review those comments. The benchmarking harmonization working group is the primary group that would look at those comments. And then we are also, aside from the comments and best practice that's perhaps coming from industry based on consultation responses, we're also looking for updates in Codex Alimentarius standards. So that's the Codex General Hygiene Principles that I mentioned earlier. So there's all of those elements together that that contribute to the creation of the benchmark requirements. And there is some back and forth between the BHWG, as I'll call it now, but the working group and our technical subcommittee, and then ultimately our steering committee. So there is a dialogue between all of those groups to ensure that we have a so that we've got agreement on what the future versions of benchmark requirements look like.
And how many people are involved, for example, in such a working group, just to have an idea of?
The working group is so we've got clear governance rules within the within GFSI, and they set the requirements and mandate. Well, not mandate, but the remit. They set the remit and eligibility criteria and numbers for the various groups. And the benchmarking harmonization working group at a maximum is 21 people in that group.
That's still manageable, right?
So that's still manageable.
Yeah.
And you can imagine, I mean, it's still only a subset of people that have an interest, and there is always quite a significant interest. We do have quite a strict process, so ensuring that participants are meet our eligibility criteria. We have some independent checking, and we do we have a scoring system to ensure that we are being fair in how we select members of that group. But we have governance rules in place that set that set all of that. So that gives us our numbers. We have had significant interest, and we like I say, we have to choose based on people being able to meet the requirements.
And for example, do they meet in person then in Paris, or is it more online on a worldwide level, or how is that?
So to try and be fair to those who have an interest, we try and give as much detail as possible when we put out our calls for expressions of interest on the group on what the expectations will be for participation. We typically will mandate two in-person meetings, and taking into account that GFSI is global, we will try and usually have one of the meetings in a European location, and then one of the meetings in a North American location. So that's we usually ask very upfront when we're asking for expressions of interest that we make potential candidates aware of that, and ask them to commit to being able to attend in person. All other meetings are typically virtual, but we have one meeting at the start to try and one meeting at the start, which is in person, which is a good opportunity, as you can imagine, for a bit of networking and relationship building, and so people can virtual meetings are great, but there are some social elements that you miss out on. So we try and have one meeting at the start so people can at least get to meet the people that they'll then be seeing quite frequently on the screen.
And you mentioned this scoring to ensure that the selection of experts is fair like that. So what would that be? What kind of scoring would that be? Or can you give an example?
Well, so we've got quite clear eligibility criteria. So we would ask a number of questions. So when somebody applies to join the group, we would ask them about their experience. We would ask them about their commitment to the group and their experience of one GFSI requirements, but food safety auditing as a whole, or food safety management as a whole. We would also ask questions about the willingness to attend meetings in person, ask about the commitment to attending virtual meetings. So there are a number of questions that we ask. There is a criteria that we expect in terms of their length of experience, their length of experience in various roles and seniority as well. So all of those elements would essentially go into a spreadsheet, if you like, and then we would be scoring them based on how well they meet those that eligibility criteria.
Very interesting. So basically, any professional with a food safety background could, in theory, apply, right? Or could have a possibility to, for example, express some comments or whatever.
Yes. So we do have a minimum number of years that we ask for, and then a level of seniority as well. So as long as they meet those requirements, then they're able to apply. What I will say is we also have some industry representation criteria as well. So we need to ensure that we have we've got some demographic percentages, if you like, that we have to meet. I think the balance at the moment is 75% industry and then 25% non-industry.
I imagine that is quite a huge communication task and coordination task that you and your team are performing. So how do you ensure that you are up to date with evolving food safety science, regulations, technology? Do you have consulting group, or where do you get your input
from? A number of different areas is where we get our input from and ensure that we're up to date and we're keeping abreast of scientific and technological and industry changes. One good thing about convening the working group, and I should say that once the working group has a mandate for, could be 3 to 4 years. So they have a set mandate for a number of years. And then once the task that they are addressing is complete, which is typically the creation of a new set of benchmark requirements, the group is disbanded, and then we put out another expression of interest for interested parties. So that's always keeping the group fresh. Members that were on the previous group are able to reapply if they wish, but it gives the opportunity for new applications from people that either didn't make the cut before or weren't aware of the call for interest. And we find that with people coming from different walks of life in different areas of industry, they bring in a lot of the practical elements, some of the scientific elements
That's
as
true.
Well. We have, as I say, we monitor Codex, and Codex is always keeping abreast of scientific changes as well, and has a robust evidence base based on the inputs from the various countries that that are members of Codex and then their scientific panels. We also have a scientific technical advisory group, which is STAG, which is independent to our GFSI steering committee. So they are on hand if we have questions for them or need input on upcoming, technical developments. But we have a good network. Essentially, we have a good network of people. We've got a very strong team as well, who have a lot of experience and expertise and good networks. And we essentially use our expertise and our networks to ensure that we are keeping abreast of scientific changes and the whole piece around scientific rigor as well.
Mm-hmm. So sometimes we hear from our customers that the requirements keep getting stricter and stricter, and some say, how far can this go? So what would you respond to that?
I think, in terms of how far can this go, I mean, I think what I would say, or perhaps what I, my response back would be just around our commitment to continuous improvement as an entity. So we want to ensure that the benchmarking requirements remain fit for purpose, remain market leading, remain in line with specifiers and industry requirements. So it's important, which again is why we constitute the group that we do, to help us to deliver the reviews and the updates to them. So I think in terms of continuous improvement and ensuring that the that we are addressing challenges or issues that are being picked up in the ecosystem, that's essentially our remit is what I would say. So so I wouldn't, and there are times that we potentially don't make changes. So I think on the basis that we consult and on the basis that we are working with a multi-stakeholder group, I think the requirements are where they need to be.
Excellent. So perhaps to give a small outlook on the work of the GFSI, how do you see the role of GFSI evolving in the next few years?
So that is one of the big questions, or that's one of the big roles, should I say, of our steering committee, to help us be future looking and to be forward thinking. We have three strategic priorities as an organization. So one of those is the benchmarking and harmonization. The other is our work on public-private partnerships and improving our networks with regulators. And then the third is capability building. So those three priorities remain very important to us. Benchmarking and harmonization is obviously the core of what we do and what we are known for. My view is that we will continue to work on those three priorities but perhaps some of the elements of what we work on might change, but benchmarking and harmonization will remain the core of what we do.
So, Elizabeth, are there any new areas on the horizon?
Great question. Thank you, Iris. There is a lot of talk in the industry around AI and technological solutions and technological advancements. So we will obviously, as any other entity would be looking to see whether there is any improvements or additions from that world that could influence the benchmark requirements. But we obviously, as the requirement setter, have to ensure that we remain within our remit of the what and not the how of implementation. One of the points I should raise is around our conference. So the GFSI conference takes place in Vancouver between the 24th and 26th of March 2026, next year. And actually, we are doing a lot of work to review and revisit the type of content that we discuss at conference, including what is the future of GFSI and the food safety food safety audit system. So actually, it's a really good opportunity for interested parties to attend and to give us their views on what works well, what doesn't work well, to come and listen to some really engaging speakers. And our hope is that we will be able to, through workshops and through taking stakeholder feedback, help to shape and influence the next few years of GFSI and the requirements.
And now, when you look back 1 year with the GFSI, what was most astonishing to you in this year? What did appeal most to you when you look back to your first year?
There have been, great question. There have been, a lot of things that I've been surprised, encouraged by. The commitment from our team, the commitment from our Steerco. I'm very encouraged by how much time our Steerco members put into supporting us. Mm-hmm. In our work streams, knowing that these are all very, very busy people with senior and busy jobs. The support that we've also had from the ecosystem, I should mention our local groups and how important they are. That's one group I didn't mention when I spoke to you earlier on. So our local groups are they're the regional arms, if you like, and help mm-hmm. with the implementation of GFSI's strategic objectives. And some of the things that they do with us include they help us to sense check the requirements. They're an important group that I should have mentioned earlier. But just the commitment and drive from those individuals who, again, are working outside of their full-time jobs mm-hmm. to support and influence and encourage what it is that we do. I think if the question is what was I astonished by in the last mm-hmm. year, it's everyone's commitment to astonished isn't the right word. I think encouraged is perhaps the word, but everyone's commitment to achieving the same thing. And ultimately what we want to ensure is the delivery and, production and delivery of safe food.
Yeah, that's a strong passion we all share. And that's, I can imagine that so many voluntary people working there.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Giving their force and energy. So, yeah, okay. Thank you very much, Elizabeth, for these insights into the GFSI process.
Thank you, and, Iris.
Yeah, we will provide some links to the benchmark and also to the technical documentation in the show notes. And for the moment, thank you very much for having been with me here.
No problem at all. Thank you very much for the opportunity. It's good to speak to you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Food Safety Talk. Stay tuned for more insights into the food supply chain. Until next time.